You know, and I do have some trauma as a childhood, but I don't think that's what made me a drug addict. I just feel like that spiritual hole that I had inside of myself, I always wanted to fill with something else, you know, and I found other things, right? Like I found things to fill that hole, people, you know, places and things to make me feel okay, although it never made me feel okay.
All right, Elisa.
Yes, huh?
Elisa, where are you from originally? Where'd you grow up?
I'm born and raised in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Tell me about your family growing up.
So we grew up really poor. You could fit my whole bedroom in, or my whole apartment in the bedroom of some of the rich kids that I went to school with. I went to a very private school. My parents worked like three jobs to put us in this private school. I'm not sure why. But yeah, we were super poor, but I know I didn't have, in my mind, I didn't have such a bad childhood.
How would you describe your childhood?
Well, it was just me and my sister, and you know, my mother was, she was, I don't think she was a reporter then. She worked for the mayor of West Palm Beach. So she actually worked for the mayor, which was right across from the playground, or excuse me, the school that I went to. So I remember seeing her office like catty corner from where I went to school. And I was being bullied at the school. So I remember being looking over at her office and being like, why can't you save me? Why can't you help me? You're at the mayor's office. Yeah, no, she was just always working. And my dad was a used car salesman. Yeah, for like 30 years.
What kind of teenager were you?
I was a disruptive, rebellious black sheep of the family.
Where did that come from?
I guess I was always wanting to be somewhere other than with my family. I was always like bucking the system, breaking the rules.
Was there anything that happened in your childhood that caused that, or?
Well,
No rough spots in your childhood?
there was when I was younger, there was some fighting in my younger life with my parents. So it never got really truly ugly, but I just remember wanting to be out of the house. And I was super jealous of my sister. And so I was just always rebelling. I was definitely the black sheep.
Did you
Yeah.
graduate high school?
I did. We eventually moved up to Jupiter when I was 11. And when I was, yeah, we were super, super poor, but my dad got this really good job with this man who was, he was this guy that owned restaurants and condos. And I remember my dad coming home with all these fancy cars. And then all of a sudden, we were scooped up out of the, like the lowly life of living in downtown West Palm Beach to living in a house in Jupiter. But my dad didn't come home for like 6 months. So we were a little confused by it, but it was just a different life. So we were in Jupiter, Florida, all of a sudden.
And drugs were a part of your childhood or no?
They were. I picked up my first drink and drug when I was about 15 years old. Yeah.
How'd you first get introduced to that?
I want to say that, I mean, I'm dating myself too, but I think I took a drank a whole bottle of Boone's Farm when I was 15, and you know, all the things happened, right? But I had arrived. I all the things, all my mind, the thousand monkeys quieted down, all the not good enough that I always felt went away, and I could breathe. You know, even though I was throwing up in the sink, I was just like, I can't wait to get back to that again. You know, because the childhood stuff, right? Like, which the bullying, the childhood, the not good enough, all of that stuff was drowned out when I took my first drink. And I was just like,
And how can you resist that after you feel it?
right. I couldn't. It was like, there's a part in the Big Book where Bill Wilson says, I have arrived, you know, and I had arrived. I just felt like I wanted that for the rest of my life. And I really did chase it for 30 years.
What drugs were you playing around with?
Well, in the beginning, you know, I never really loved pot. But I, to be honest with you, I was kind of a garbage can. Like, I would put something in my system and I'd be like, am I going up or am I going down? I almost didn't care what it was. I just wanted to be not who I was, where I was, or feel the way I felt. Because, like, I was that kid that if you see them in a picture, I had that frown on my face. I was just so restless and irritable and discontented. And I remember feeling that way from the time I was tiny, you know, just wanting to be like somewhere else.
Like you were born with it?
Yeah. I just wanted to be somewhere else or be someone else.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and I do have some trauma as a childhood, but I don't think that's what made me a drug addict. I just feel like that spiritual hole that I had inside of myself, I always wanted to fill with something else, you know, and I found other things, right? Like I found things to fill that hole, people, you know, places and things to make me feel okay, although it never made me feel okay. Yeah. I chased it literally for 30 years.
Were there addicts in your family?
You know, I would think that you could call them addicts. I know my dad was gambling for years and years, and my mother, although she said she was, you know, up until the day she died 6 months ago, said she wasn't. But I do think that, you know, we saw the behaviors there for many, many years. Yeah.
And so after high school, this continues.
Oh, goodness. I just, you know, I attempted to go to college. I thought it was so cute to show up to give a speech with two different shoes on or, like, write my papers drunk. And, I mean, I did. I attempted to go away to school several times. And it was, like, it was a badge of honor for me to fail out of school. I remember, like, I had to drop all my classes. I told everybody I was going to the University of Florida because I'm from Florida, and I was going to, like, the community college, and I literally had to drop all of my classes because I had something like a point one something average because I just could never pull it off, right? Like, I could never pull any of it off because it was, my life was 100% about the party, and I would tell everybody I was just a party girl. You know, I even was a little sister of a fraternity at one point up at UF. And I thought, oh my God, this is the best thing that has ever happened to me. And literally I was drunk for 5 and 6 days straight at University of Florida. And I don't remember much of it. I know my friend said one time, oh, Lisa, I traveled the world, but I don't remember it. So much of my 20s and 30s, I don't remember. I really don't. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, how do you not remember 20 years of your life? But I don't.
How were you supporting yourself?
Waitressing at times. Yeah, a lot of times I was waitressing or bartending.
So you were functional?
depends on what you want to call functional. Mm. But yes, you know, I'd pull it together. You know, the will is a crazy thing. I'd pull it together and you know, I thought nobody knew, right? Like, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. I was always just surviving around my addiction.
It's funny how many addicts will assume that nobody really figures out that they're using.
Yeah.
But everyone around them knows they're using, but is afraid to say anything. So it just remains unspoken.
Yeah.
And everyone knows they're in trouble, but they're pretending like everything's cool. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah. And everything was such a catastrophe, too, because I would just have these huge meltdowns. And I remember I'm kicked out of these apartments and, you know, no money and no friends. Many times friends would cut me off for months and months at a time. And I just would find another group of lower companions to be able to kick it with. Yeah. But I was always continuously going when the party was stopping. I knew I was different. I knew I was different at 15. But 30 years later, I'm still doing the same thing.
What kind of things were you getting into in your 20s and 30s?
Well, I got these, I always got great jobs, right? Like I finally got this job in food sales when I got out of college. So I was able to go and drink with these chefs and drink with all these
You got a degree?
Yeah, I actually, by the skin of my teeth, graduated college, which made my parents proud, right? Like they were like, well, she did it. It took me literally 7-8 years to get a college degree, but I got the degree. And it was a proud moment. But even the day that I graduated college, I was so hungover, I could hardly stand up to pick up my diploma. I got it from Florida Atlantic University. I remember being in the car being like, whoa.
And it wasn't like you were trying to forget about some traumatic thing that happened to you in your childhood.
No. And I did have some trauma. Like I did have some trauma around some, like, and a lot of people do, but I'm still not convinced that trauma is the reason I was an alcoholic. I know that I was an alcoholic because when I put something in my system, I always overshot the mark. I could have passed a lie detector test. Like, in fact, I literally would say to my friends, to the people that loved me, like, I'm not going to drink again. I remember there was one time that my parents took me. My father's on a walker. My mom was on a walker. My father could hardly see at night. And I remember saying, I'm not going to have a drink tonight. I promise you, I swear to myself. And 2 minutes later, the waiter's walking by, and I'm like, and my dad had to drive with terrible eyes and mom on the walker home, and I'm calling a friend to get out of the restaurant. So it wasn't like I was hiding my childhood. It's just when that booze went in my system, I had no choice or control ever. Yeah.
What was your lowest point?
I was a Palm Beach County school teacher. And my first DUI was a 10-car pileup, and the student in the first car was at the rival high school. And I didn't get found out, right, by the news blotter. They call it blotter in Florida. But I had some students that heard. And they're coming up to me, Miss Saunders, did you get in trouble? Did you get a DUI for drinking? And I'm like, you guys know I don't drink, because I was always stopping. Always. I just couldn't stop starting again. My second DUI, I hit a car that hit a tow truck. And there was two people that ran out of the way of that tow truck. And I remember not feeling anything. I felt no guilt. I felt no sadness. I remember feeling inconvenience that I couldn't get down to my at the time, it was my alcohol dealer. I had found this guy that was helping me. I had gotten into cocaine at that time. And he was helping me every weekend get cocaine. So I graduated, right? Like, I was like Xanax before, booze in the middle, and then cocaine at the end of the night. And then I'd start back up. And I'm teaching school at the time. And it's like fish don't know the water they're swimming in, right? Like two little fish are swimming. The big fish comes up and says, hey, guys, how's the water? They look at each other. What water? I didn't know how sick I was. I really didn't. And, you know, I'm losing my teaching certificate, right, because I didn't report it to the Palm Beach County school system. I had to take an ethics course. I didn't do it. I didn't report it. I didn't do any of that stuff. And you know, my father picks me up from jail the next day, and he had to pull over and take his blood pressure. I still didn't feel anything. Now that both of my parents are dead, it does make me feel some kind of shame and real sadness around that. But I want to say that was probably my lowest point. Sitting in the Palm Beach County jail system, they had they would put our pictures on our wrist. And I know I remember looking at my picture thinking, like, I had that slender thread, that moment of clarity where I knew that if I didn't change, I was going to die. So God crept in for just a split second as I'm in that jail cell. I wish I could say that was the end of the story and I stayed sober. I didn't, but a couple years after that, I did make it into the rooms of recovery, whatever you want to call recovery. And I was able to work some sort of program.
Tell me about that.
I did make it in, right? Like I made it in because I had lost my soul. I really lost the desire to live. And I was, again, had that moment of clarity that if I didn't change, I was going to die. So no driver's license. I had lost my driver's license for 18 months. I was jumping a fence to teach school because I couldn't drive. I at the time, checked myself into treatment. And I had gotten out of treatment and went into recovery, like I said. And then I had called a girlfriend because I couldn't do it on my own. And I said to her, and I literally said this to her. She lived in Delray Beach, Florida. Delray Beach, Florida is like the recovery capital of Florida, like we are here in California, right? And I said, I think I'm going to kill myself. And she said, oh, you are? Well, why don't you come down here to Delray and dog sit for a little while? And I said, all right, well, I can always kill myself later. And I went down there and I saw people doing something differently. They were actually working like a true program. And I was really, really in a lot of pain. I was suffering. But of course, I wanted to paint the facade that I was okay. Like, I'm good at that. I look great on the outside, but I'm dying inside. So I asked someone to help me. And the woman that helped me, I want to say, and this is a little bit of a cliche say, she was armed with the facts about herself. She knew that she suffered from alcoholism and addiction. She had had a spiritual awakening. She changed inside. I didn't know what that was like. I was just dry and suffering and sick and depressed and hurting in every way. And she actually walked me through and was able to help me change. That was kind of the beginning of my journey of being different, doing it differently.
Is it frightening to not be using?
I was putting down my best friend, right? Like, how am I going to do this without the only solution that I've ever had for my whole entire life? I was a baby when I picked up that solution. I knew nothing else. So it was really scary. Yeah, Mark, it was really scary. But there had to be a better way, right? Like, other people are doing it.
When nothing else is working.
It wasn't. I mean, I got to the point where it was like, accept a spiritual solution or take myself out. That's where I got. Somebody told me, they're like, you don't even have a soul anymore. Like, you're just existing. Like, talk about, like, you know, some days, right? Like, I'm just surviving still because I have had some loss lately. So sometimes it's not easy. But I got to the point where I was planning on, there's no way to exist like this anymore. I can't do it anymore. I was that tired. I was that in pain. I can't even describe how in pain I was. Like, to put it into words would be like, how do we describe water? I can't describe swimming if I've never swam. It's impossible to even tell you.
And you went to a program?
I did. I went to a program in West Palm Beach, Florida. And it wasn't like the program was so great. It's just I was ready. You know how, I mean, they really like, they sell us drug addicts and alcoholics short when they're like, oh, he'll be ready, she'll be ready, let's wait. I don't know about that. I mean, I think that I just had the solution presented to me, and I probably could have gotten sober in one room with, a sober movie, on the screen every single day, because that's how desperate. I was as desperate as a drowning man. I needed a life preserver, whatever that would have been. Yeah.
Looking back at your life, what would you have done differently if you could have?
Probably not wasted so much time. You know, most women my age, although I feel like I look great,
You do.
I've got a good doctor. And thank you, by the way. Most women my age have families and children. You know, I'm alone. I got two great cats. I got a lot of good women in my life, but I don't have children. I don't have a family. I don't have what people that actually build a life have. I gave all that away. I have a lifetime of addiction. So I don't have what I would have had had I not spent 30 years living in addiction. And that's a regret. You know, do I like my life today? Yes, I like my life today. I was able to change myself, and I actually can be of use to other people like me. And I can even like work in a space where I can be helpful to addiction, people with addiction and mental health, working in a treatment space now.
Have you done that?
Yeah, I do that now.
That's almost a prerequisite, isn't it?
Well, there's a lot of us that do, right? Because we've gone to the gates of hell and insanity, and we've come out of it. So it's like, do I go back to being a teacher? No, because I've been able to feel what it feels like, so I can work at a career that makes me super, super useful in. And I'm glad. You know, I work at a really great little independently owned facility called Ventura Recovery Center just around the corner. They truly care. It's like a 12-step friendly or immersionist place, and it's perfectly fit for me. But I don't know what else I do because I'm on purpose now, right? I was not on purpose in my life, maybe ever, even though I did like being a teacher.
But the helping seems to keep
the helping.
It keeps you on track.
It does, because I have changed. So my whole purpose of being sober, Mark, is to be usefully, happily whole, even when things aren't so fabulous, right? Like, why am I sober? Why am I here? Why am I even alive? Because I can be of use to somebody else. I can help somebody that's just like me.
Is it interesting for you to watch people who are where you were 10, 20 years ago?
It really is. It is. It's interesting, and it's almost bittersweet, because when somebody isn't able to accept spiritual help or take a plan of recovery, it's like, so you want to shake. I want to shake them and be like, hey, but you can have a better way. Or it's so beautiful to see somebody accept it and the lights come on in their eyes. And I'm sure you see it too. You see both sides of the coin where they're not, mm-hmm. and how sad and how painful and how awful this disease can be. And on the other side, when someone changes and they're like, look what I went through, what it was like, what happened, I spiritually changed, and what my life is like now. It's really beautiful. And I'm so grateful. Like, even when things aren't perfect, I would never go back to what I was.
No temptation, no relapse chance?
Never with that. Like, I've lost both of my parents in sobriety, but the beautiful part is I was angry at my parents. I was living in revenge with them for so many years because of me not getting my needs met as a kid, or me having some of the things that happened to me as a child. But I got free from that because I don't have to be angry. And if it wasn't for a program of recovery, none of that would have happened. You know, like, I don't have to live in regret and be like, oh, I still am angry at my mom, or my dad didn't do that for me when I was young. Like, I made it home in the nick of time before my mom took her last breath 6 months ago. And let me tell you something, the beautiful part of that is I was free from any anger. You know, a couple of months before she died, I said to her, you know, I love you. And she said, yeah, and I know you're trying to make up for lost time. They were so mad at me for moving to California. And I go, she goes, we're fine, Lisa, we're good. And to have kind of an amends and a blank, clean slate with a woman that I spent most of my life angry at, I would never have had that if it wasn't for this program. or I should say program. I'm not going to say program. If it wasn't for my recovery, if it wasn't for me being sober, you know, I have 14 years. It's a gift I never wanted. It's a miracle that I never thought I would ever be able to have.
Forgiveness is such an important part of the whole process, isn't it?
It's everything. It's everything. And I was also able to forgive myself. Like, I was always in a place of all that self-loathing and the shame. And I've healed from so much of that. Like, of course I have work to do. It's a lifelong errand. But the forgiveness is the freedom.
What's your biggest regret?
Spending so many years being mad at my parents, at myself. Being mad at my mother robbed me of a lot of relationships. Being threatened by women, not feeling good enough, you know, and a relationship with myself.
Being angry, period.
Yeah.
At others, at yourself, at anyone. Is just, it's such a poison.
It is so bad for me, and I have to honestly say that, like, for people like me, it'll kill me. Like, a normal person, maybe they can have resentments, maybe they can function in the world, but I feel that it's like my poisonous roots, right, with this recovery have grasped new soil. I feel it when I'm resentful. I feel the poison coming into my heart, coming into my soul, coming into my body. And it takes me so off course that it still changes me. So I have to practice love and tolerance. Even the grief that I've been feeling in the last 6 months has been challenging for me. Like, I called my spiritual guide, if you will, like a month ago. I said, I'm disconnected from God and others. And she said, well, then you know what to do. The solution doesn't change. This is on you. Like, this is your recovery. This is your life. And it's life and death for people like us, even with a little bit of time. Like, either I'm heading towards a drink or a drug, or I'm heading away from a drink or a drug. And for me, a drink is to die. I know that. You know how I know that? Because I have 30 years that'll prove it. You know, there was times that I couldn't see the truth from the false, i.e. the right from the wrong. Today, I have like an intuition that's different. Like, I know the difference. I have like a different thinking from the changes I've made. It's like a rebirth, if you will.
What goes through your head when you see somebody who just isn't ready?
Well,
it needs help.
Recovery tells us not to spend too much time on it and to help someone that needs it. But of course, my heart wants to. Like, the heart wants to. And I have that internal voice. So I'm always, I stand ready, Mark. I stand ready to help. Because that's what my purpose is, right? Like, to help, be available to help someone sick and suffering, be available to help someone struggling.
Miracles do happen.
They do. And I'll never give up on anybody. Just like someone didn't give up on me. I'm sure you see miracles all the time, which is why you do this amazing platform that you do, which I really appreciate so much.
Thank you. Elisa, let me ask you one last question. What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned in all of this?
The most important lesson that I've learned in all of this is not to waste time being angry and not living. You know, I have wasted a lot of time in self-pity, in sadness. There's times that I've spent weeks and months feeling sorry for myself and calling it depression. And not taking life for what life is. One thing that I will not do anymore is waste that type of time anymore. That's the lesson. because I've changed, I'm going to do everything I can to live life to the fullest and to the best of my ability. People will be like, how you doing? Well, I'm having a challenging day, but you know what? I'm doing the best I can. So I'm just going to do everything I can to live life. And that's the lesson. And to be useful to others. You know, it's not always easy. You know, there's days that I do feel that, you know, I need God's help. But I'm safe. I'm protected. I'm sober. And I'm alive. And as long as I've got that, I got a chance. And like you said, miracle. I feel that I'm a miracle. And I really do believe that.
That's great. That's a wonderful way to see yourself.
Yeah.
All right. Elisa, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Continue. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.